We'll now move to agenda item two, the Oregon Forest Resources Institute Values and Beliefs Survey.
Chair Imason, Board of Forestry members, State Forester Doherty. I'm Mike Clossy with the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, and with me today is Michelle Neese, with President of DHM Consulting, and we're going to talk about the Values and Beliefs Survey that we completed in January, that actually DHM completed for OFRI. And I just want to start with a little context, especially for the new board members. OFRI is a state agency. Our mission is education. Education to the public, primarily about the forests of Oregon. And in order to do education to an audience, you need to understand the audience. And the whole purpose of the Values and Beliefs Survey is to help us understand what Oregonians think about forestry so we can help educate them. We do this in cooperation with the Oregon Department of Forestry. They've been a partner in everyone since I've been with OFRI for the past 16 years. In this study, ODF actually came up with some of the money and helped us come up with some of the questions. So at the end of the presentation, Michelle's going to talk about the specific ODF questions, and I think you'd be interested in those. But I think you'd be interested in all of them. And so I'm just going to turn it over to Michelle, and thank you for letting us be here.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you all. I'm happy to be here today to share some of our results and sort of continuing that theme of hearing from a variety of voices and perspectives. That's what this work is about. Disappeared. Okay, thank you. We want to be able to hear from everyone across the state. As you know, the people who can come here and share their perspectives is a small percentage. And so really our work is to try to give you that broader context, and we hope that the information helps you with your work going forward. I am not going to be able to share today the results of the entire survey. That would take too long. We're going to focus on Oregonians' core values and beliefs around forests and forest management here in the state. And we also are going to be able to show you how that has changed or remained the same over time. I want to point out that we did an online survey of 800 Oregon residents. And when I compare to the past, those previous surveys were done on phone. And so I just want to preemptively acknowledge that some, that makes a little bit of interpreting change over time uncertain, because you can never be entirely sure whether that was true change over time or whether it's because of the change in methodology. When those come up, I will try to point out, but for example, one of the things we know is that people on the phone tend to have more extreme opinions, very positive, very negative, and people online tend to say, I don't know, more often. This survey took about 13 minutes to complete online, which is actually a fair amount of time. That allows us online to also give people some good descriptions of what we mean, and so we were able to use that. And we use best practices in the industry, quotas, and weighting to ensure that the results are representative of the population, with that margin of error around 3.5%. So we'll get started just by some of our first general questions about forest and the wood products. And the question, one of the first questions we asked was an open-ended question, and we asked people in their own words to tell us what they value most about Oregon's forests. This chart shows you the words they came up with top of mind, and the size of the word reflects how often it was mentioned. And here in Oregon, when people think about the forests, they first think about beauty and scenery. That's where their mind goes first. And if I clump all those words that have to do with beauty and scenery, that was about 42% of responses. The next most common response was about recreational activities, hiking, camping, fishing. Those responses together accounted for about 26% of people's top of mind thoughts. And the economy, all the different words related to jobs and economy, rounded out at about 16%. And so you can see that people first think about forest and the way they connect with it most often today, the beauty and the scenery. This is not to say that people don't think of forests as in terms of the economic benefits at all. In fact, when we ask them which industry was the top in their part of the state, 1 in 5 pointed to forestry and wood products. This does differ by where you live. So if you're living in the Portland area, it's closer to 12%. Along the Willamette Valley, about 27%. And those in the rest of the state, it's actually 31%. And so I think that probably makes sense to us. It reflects the actual place of the industry in different parts of the state. We also asked people to rate how favorable they felt towards specific industries. And what you can see here is that Oregonians are most favorable in their impression of agriculture and the forestry and wood products. And you can see that's a difference of about 20 points between agriculture up there at top with 79% favorability and construction at 57% favorability. And for both agriculture and forestry and wood products, the dark green is how many people were very favorable. And really to have that level of positivity, 46% means a plurality of strongly favorable, is fairly unique among industries, as you can see. I also point out that the views of forestry have actually gotten more positive since 2015. And so you can see that in 2015, the sort of light gray bars, agriculture was up there on the top, sort of in its own field, and forestry has moved up into the top tier alongside agriculture, and standing out from the rest of the industries. When, for those people who said, yes, I have a favorable impression of forestry, we asked them why. And in their own words, they, most people tell us, or the most common responses were around economy, that the industry is a major employer, it provides jobs, or that just more generally, its contribution to the economy of the region and the state are valuable. When we asked those who had an unfavorable impression of the industry, which we know was 72 people, so not very many, the biggest reason for that unfavorable impression has to do around loss of trees, whether they use deforestation, loss of trees, or even clear cutting there at 13%. Just that physical, maybe even visual impact of seeing trees go away is what leads to that negative impressions. I will also note that the public's use of words like deforestation might be different than your understanding of those words. Alongside that high favorability and the positive impression is, however, the fact that knowledge about the industry is continuing to decline. So here I actually went all the way back to 2010 to show you how many people say that they consider themselves very knowledgeable or somewhat knowledgeable about the industry. And that number has been steadily declining from 81% in 2010 to 55% this year. And I think especially dramatic is that change in very knowledgeable from 1 in 3 in 2010 to less than 1 in 10 today. And I'll point out later that there's actually, we have some internal validation around that because I asked them later about their knowledge about some regulations, and people who know more about regulations also said here that they knew more about the industry. So it's nice to see that there's some validation for their self-assessment. And speaking of those regulations, here are the results again showing you changes over time in how the percentage of the public who are aware of the existing Oregon laws around three key protections, protections for fish and wildlife, replanting after harvest, and protection of water resources. And this was a simple yes-no question. Does Oregon have this or not? And what you can see is that about 7 in 10 believe that Oregon had each of these laws, but that number has gone down. The gray bar is from 2015.
You said it was simple yes-no. Was there a don't know?
There was.
Okay.
And in fact, it is not because more people are saying no. It's because more people are now saying I don't know. Right. So here... the number of people this year, the dark gray in 2019, who said don't know around protection of water resources was actually 1 in 3. And about 1 in 4 were unsure of whether Oregon protects fish and wildlife habitat. Even more revealing, I think, is I looked at how many people said yes to all three. 51% said yes to all three, which is pretty surprising to me in the sense that if you have these three grouped together, even if I show them to you in random order, you might think people would learn that the answer might be yes or just guessing. But in fact, that 51% who said yes to all three is a really good sign that this is a need or an opportunity to educate the public about what we currently have.
Do you have any question that gets to whether some people are saying that they don't believe there is protection for those resources? Is there a difference between those that don't think there's anything protecting those resources and those that know there are provisions that protect it, but they think the protections are inadequate?
These questions don't get at that question of inadequacy. We get at it a little bit around privately owned forest management, and I believe I'm showing you those results in a minute. Okay. And I think throughout, I would ask you to keep this slide in the back of your head as we go through some of the others, because I think it sort of lends a very important foundation for understanding some of the responses.
I know some folks that if asked those questions would say no, those protections don't exist based on not the fact that there's no provisions in law for them, but that they don't think they're adequate provisions in law so that the resource is not protected. I'm not sure quite how to interpret the answers if you don't make that distinction.
Right. I wonder if some of those people might be saying that I don't know, rather than saying no, there's no law about that. But we don't know. We'd have to have more conversations. And that is definitely one of the limits to a survey, whether it's on the phone or online, is that inability to really dig into why. And that's the sort of question that focus groups, for example, are really good for. So we can really dig into there, understand the nuances a little bit better. One of the questions we do ask is whether people agree or disagree that the state of Oregon is doing a good job of enforcing forest protection laws. And that number has remained steady over time with a solid majority, 73% this year, agreeing that the state does. We also spent some time talking to people about forest management. An interesting question we introduced this year was we asked people to indicate how much of Oregon's forests they believe are managed by different entities, including state government, federal government, and private, either private companies or families and individuals. And the results were somewhat interesting. We have in blue what Oregonians think, and we have in green what is true. And what you can see is that they're fairly close on the allocation of lands owned by private companies or families and individuals. And even their total then around government is fairly close, but they have a pretty big misconception about how much of the forests in Oregon are managed by state government versus federal government. And I will just point out that we find over and over that people who've lived here longer and people who are older tell us they know more. And this was another case where they were right. They did know. So they were still off, but they were more accurate.
And my guess would that would suggest to me that more people respond to this from the west side than the east side. But, you know, do you know if that's true?
Well, this might surprise you. So actually, this won't surprise you then. People who live in Oregon outside of the Willamette Valley and Portland area were more accurate, but they were still pretty far off.
I would guess that the fact that we have state parks all throughout the state affect that number. So they're not making the connection to the forest. So they're just, thinking of all those state parks, I'll bet.
Yes, that was some of our speculation as well, right? It's also interesting to look over time at how well people think those entities are doing at forest management. So here I have state and federal government in color. And first I want to point out that people believe the state of Oregon does a better job than the federal government, and that's true of almost all government services. If I ask people how well their city's doing compared to the state, they think their city's doing better. What's ever closer to you, you usually have more positive opinion about. But for both, opinions have actually risen over time, which is somewhat interesting in light of the fact that maybe knowledge has actually gone down over time. And then perceptions about families and private companies have really stayed stable over time. Okay. We were able to ask a few more detailed questions about private forest companies. And so I think that first question gets back, Cindy, to you. And we asked people how well they believe private companies are doing at replanting trees after harvest, protecting fish and wildlife habitat, and protecting water supplies. And we gave them some information leading up to this about the size, the amount of acres, and who some of those large landowners might be. And what you can see is that a majority think private companies are doing well at replanting trees after harvest, and that opinions about that are 10 points higher than when it comes to the other protections, water and habitat. And I think just also point out that there was a shift upwards from 2010 to 2015 in positivity about replanting, and then everything that has just sort of stayed stable since then. Okay. We also did ask about whether people think Oregon's current laws are strong enough to meet their concerns about the management of private forest land. So it only partially gets at that bigger question. And again, remembering that 51% knew all three regulation laws, when we ask them, are existing laws strong enough, 42% say yes. And this is a fairly substantial drop since 2015. And 39% are not sure. And again, some of that change might be due to the methodology. I will call that out because we shifted from online to phone. That's a pretty big shift. Usually we're talking about more like 10 to 15 points increase. And this is quite a bit beyond that.
Is this just a 51% that knew about the laws that are answering this question, or everybody? They may not know about the law, but they do have an opinion about how strong they are. Is that correct?
Yes, this is everyone. Okay. Okay. We also asked them some questions about clear cutting. And about 4 in 10 say that some clear cutting should be allowed, even though only about 1 in 4, 23%, think that clear cutting is acceptable. So that really tells you that even people who don't really like the idea of clear cutting have some openness to whether it should be allowed. But the number of people who agree it should be allowed has dropped since 2015. Okay. We asked people to rank their top concerns about clear cutting so we could try to understand that a little bit more. And the top concerns really focus on those areas that regulations are meant to address. So one concern is disturbance to animal habitats. 77% think that's one of their top three concerns about clear cutting, soil erosion, and disturbance to the water system. So that's really where the public's priorities clearly are. Okay. The next questions were those that were included in conjunction with ODF. And the first question was, we asked Oregonians to tell us which of the following is the biggest threat to Oregon's forests. And we gave them these options. Wildfire was the biggest threat that people saw with 29%, and 20% said not enough forest management. And we actually defined that for people. We had forest management specifically delineated as thinning trees, prescribed burning, and removing small trees and brush. So, and I will say that wildfire comes out at top and at top, but that somewhat matters around how long you've lived here. So people who have lived here for at least 30 years actually said not enough forest management was as important as wildfire. Even though that difference isn't that big right now, they were the same. And I would also say that for people who have a college education, climate change was as important as wildfire. So there are some nuances to how the public thinks about this question. We also asked people, what would they do if they had questions about the safety or the health of a tree near your house? And I think this was to support some of the ODF's work around urban forestry. And we said they could rank up to three actions they're most likely to take. And calling ODF was right up there at the top, along with looking on the internet or calling a local tree company. I think that is somewhat surprising that in the sense of I think the lack of awareness, I wasn't sure if people would make the connection, but that definitely speaks well to ODF's presence in the community, that it would be one of the top of mind resources. Also related to the idea of how do people see trees in their everyday lives, which for many people is in their neighborhood. Overall, Oregonians are very positive in how they regard trees in their neighborhood. It's essential to their neighborhood's health and well-being. And so that information really just sort of helps give an understanding to how typical non-rural people view trees. And I will just point out that we only asked this of people who lived in a setting other than a rural setting. Okay. We also gave people a list of 17 activities and asked them which they were most interested in doing. Here's the ones that were chosen by at least 10% of Oregonians. You can see that day hiking, camping, picnicking, fishing are all popular activities for Oregonians. And then backpacking, boating, and bird watching are done by maybe fewer, but still relatively popular. All right. So trying to tie it all together to sum it up. This tells me that Oregonians view forestry and the wood products industry favorably, but knowledge of the industry is declining. They also lack awareness of current legal protections. And those two features together suggest that there's some need to do some public outreach for people. Right now the public has a positive attitude toward the industry and they are inclined to lean that way. But when there's doubt and uncertainty, that's also an opening for other stories to bubble up and impress themselves upon people. And I also just want to note about the clear cutting. They are concerned about clear cutting and they're most concerned about the change to wildlife habitat. So I think that is, you know, that gives some guidance as to where some education could occur. And certainly continues to confirm the importance of continued outreach. And just to keep in mind, I said this earlier, but when we think about who lacks knowledge about the industry, it is younger residents and those who moved here within the last 10 years. And so in that sense, continue to track public's attitude, I think is helpful. I hope it's helpful to you. And those are some initial thoughts on where to start.
And I think we have some time for questions.
Yeah. So as Oregonians become less knowledgeable, but their attitudes towards forestry have become more positive, so what do you attribute that to? Do you attribute that to your marketing campaigns as the primary factor, or is there something else you can point to?
It's a good question. I do think some of the knowledge level about the specifics of reforestation, protecting of waters, and protecting of wildlife are a direct result of some of the outreach public education that we've been doing. If you remember, there was a time in some of the slides that Michelle showed back in 2010 where all of those numbers were lower. 2010 came right after the recession. We're totally funded on timber harvest tax. So no timber harvest was down, tax was down. We cut way back on our educational advertising in 2010, and we saw boom. And so that was the first thing we put back. We've been pretty stable since then, and I think that's made a difference. I really think the lack of knowledge, though, is reflective of new people moving into Oregon. I do a lot of public speaking presentations to Lions clubs, Rotary clubs, whatever. And I would say 10 years ago, there wasn't a group I talked to that didn't say, oh, yeah, my brother works at Hampton, or my father-in-law is a truck driver, or yeah, my dad's a small woodland owner. You'd hear that all the time. I'm hearing that less and less in Portland and Salem. So I think some of it is just a disconnect of the new people moving in and the traditional role of the forestry. So I think that's some of it. I don't think the lack of knowledge is because we're not teaching enough, but obviously we need to teach more.
And then one detail in the presentation on the clear cutting, I saw the two numbers in terms of how people are looking at it. But you didn't present the number of how many people just disapprove of it.
Well, if 23% find it acceptable, you know,
What was the number that just that they
said were absolutely horrible
in your presentation?
Because we always do a, you know, a absolutely great,
favorable, not the unfavorable.
Oh. All right. Sorry, I have to. So the they rated it on a scale of 1 to 5, and so the average was 2.6. So the average is actually neutral. And you're gonna make me dig here.
I have incredible cross tabs.
So how acceptable? So the people who rated it the sort of bottom of 1 or 2 was 41%.
41%.
41%.
And then sort of an unknown percentage.
So you have 24% are that neutral 3. And then you have 12%, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay,
thank you.
Good question. Others?
I don't know if it's going statewide, but I know down in Southwest, OFRI's obviously currently involved in a fairly major ad campaign. I think if I'm on evenings when I've got the TV on, I probably see your ad 4 or 5 times an evening, regardless of which channel I'm on. So you're doing pretty blanket coverage. I'm wondering what drives when, where, and what intensity you run your ad campaigns and how it links to the survey.
Perfect. Good question, Cindy. So actually, we do one ad campaign a year. And it's always in the spring, and because we know people don't watch as much TV in the summer. Winter, it's more expensive, so spring is a good, affordable time. Mm-hmm. We work with our ad agency, and they basically, we have so much money that we spend, and we want to hit the 4 major TV markets, Portland, Eugene, Bend, and Medford. We hit all of those markets. So that's how we do it. And it's really based on we have X amount of money to spend. But one of the things with TV stations, especially in a small market like Medford, they often don't have enough ads to fill all their spots. So when they have a buy that's pretty good size, like OFRI, they say, okay, you know, we can do 5 spots a day, but we have all this blank spots. Let's just run OFRI. And so I think that's been happening in the Medford market this year, which can be good. In terms of what we advertise,
it's so frequent, it almost feels like closing weeks of an election. I mean, it's just hitting you all the time down there.
So in terms of what we do base it on the values and beliefs. So some of the 2 ads that are running now, one of them is about wood and wood products because we thought we would try that. But one of the things that we've seen with the lack of knowledge on the forest practices, most likely, as we go through our new creative for next year, we're going to be getting back to basics and less focus on things like wood.
Yeah.
But Mike, you're not targeting Medford any more than you're targeting.
No more at all. Okay. We have X amount of dollars that we spend through the agency, and we want to divide it up by eyes. So Portland gets the largest share, then Eugene, then Medford, Bend gets the smallest share. But we don't say, yeah, run these ads in Medford. No, it's just a set amount of dollars. And we have the ads that we're running. And we tend to run 1 week on and 1 week off just so we don't get that saturation. You just probably are watching TV only on our on weeks. So you're getting a bonus.
Yeah, getting the
good
bonus.
Good question. Yeah. Very observant.
And given the some of the regional differences that you've seen in your survey data, do you try to tailor your message to the different regions, or does everybody get the same message?
That's a really good question. So far, everyone's got the same message, except we had an ad campaign a couple of years ago. It was very focused on reforestation. Mm-hmm. And we recognize that in the Bend market, the Eastern Oregon market, there's not a lot of reforestation. It tends to be selection management. So instead, we invested our advertising money through the Deschutes Forest Collaborative Project, and they were doing outreach on federal management and collaboratives. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we're still, when we're talking about water protection, wildlife protection, it's pretty universal. And right now, our ads are on water and on wood, and that should be the same everywhere. But it costs a lot to build the ads, but it costs even more to run them. So Oregon's not really big enough that we divide up the market in most cases.
I would just supplement that when they're developing the creative, they can, we often go back and say, well, who needs to learn the most? Let's make sure the creative resonates with them, that they have a positive, you know, reception of the messages and the images, so that we know it's a little bit of tailoring that way. It's the most efficient way to do it rather than having multiple separate ads.
And we do target our ads very much. They put them on shows based on this is the audience we want. We also do Hulu and YouTube because we know the 30-something audience isn't as likely to sit on they're not on the wire. So they watch those shows, and so we target ads for those because that's a very important audience segment. The 25 to 35 young women are very important for thoughts in Oregon.
Yeah, I guess that says something about the color of my hair. I haven't seen you on Hulu or YouTube.
I know. Good.
So I've got one other comment, maybe a piece of advice, but I was I noted you publish every year this little Forest Facts brochure. Every 2 years. And had just read through that. And I was struck because I think, you know, our forests are so affected today by climate change. And, you know, with our longer fire seasons, blah, 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 blah. And it just didn't speak well of the credibility of your organization to not even mention it in that brochure. And so that's, my comment.
That's a great question, Jim. And I would say twofold is what we tend to do is there's a certain amount of the data that we report on every single year. And this was a skinny issue, so we didn't have a special topic. We do have special topics from time to time. We had one on wood last time. We've had one on the Forest Practices Act. We had one on the economy. This time, since we're doing an economic study separately, we didn't do a special one. Next time, however, we're in the middle of starting a big thing on carbon and forestry. So we very well could have that as a special issue. It'd be more likely that we would talk about forests and carbon than forests and climate change, just because the data doesn't present the same way for a little book. Whereas if you're doing a bigger report, you can deal with climate change. And to look at climate change beyond the interactions with forestry, you know, that's really somebody else's job. But we will definitely be talking about climate change and forests and carbon. But to get the climate change and carbon thing, that's not a forest resources issue. That's a geoscience issue, I think. Beyond our scope, but certainly forests and climate are our scope, and forests and carbon is definitely our scope. And thank you for reading the book to notice that. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.